Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll start today with a deeper look at a story reported by the Boston Globe. It's about a UMass Amherst student whom the Globe refers to as Logan. Logan was struggling with heroin addiction, and around 11 p.m. on October 3rd last year, Logan sent a text to his suspected dealer saying, "My veins are crying."
The dealer arrived at Logan's off-campus apartment just after midnight and delivered the heroin in bags marked Tropicana. A few minutes later, the dealer texted Logan asking, "How much Tropicana did you drink?"
But Logan never replied. He was dead on his bathroom floor from an overdose and discovered there by his father and stepmother the next day, who'd driven to campus from out of state for UMass Amherst family weekend.
No one in Logan's family says they knew the depth of his drug problems, but they contend that UMass officials should have alerted them because campus police knew Logan was involved with drugs. A year before his death, they'd busted Logan for selling LSD, and they seized a hypodermic needle from him. But his parents were never informed because police offered Logan the chance to keep his drug offenses secret by becoming a campus confidential informant.
And Logan accepted. As the Globe reports, his death raises questions about whether UMass Amherst did enough to help Logan and about the use of students as campus informants in drug investigations. So joining us now with more is Scott Allen. He's the senior assistant metro editor at the Boston Globe. Scott, good to have you on the program.
It's good to be here.
So this is a very tragic and difficult story, and I wonder if you could just start by telling us a little bit more about the young man at the center of it. Who was Logan? Tell us more about him.
Well, he was an out-of-state student who'd been a star hockey player in high school. He wanted a career in the medical field, and he came to UMass Amherst specifically for that. Was a borderline Dean's List student. Got a lot of scholarship money to be there at UMass, and he was the light of his parents' life. At least that's the way they certainly describe him. And he'd gotten into some trouble. He'd been arrested once for cocaine possession back in his home state. But his parents thought that was just a youthful indiscretion, that it was something that was never going to be repeated. They just had no idea that this was a person with a serious drug problem at all. They thought everything was going great. In fact, the night before Logan died, his mother talked to him on the phone. He was cheerful. He was looking forward to their visit. And he asked his mother, "Can you make some lasagna? I love your homemade lasagna. Can you bring that to me?" And so she did that. She stayed up late and she made the lasagna. And minutes after he got off the phone with his mother, he was texting with his dealer about, "When are you going to be here? I need it. I need it. I need it."
Yeah. Well, as you report in the Globe, and as the Globe reports, it may have been known unofficially amongst obviously his dealer, his suspected dealer, and possibly friends that Logan had a heroin problem. But that wasn't what he was busted for a year before his death. As the Globe notes, it was for LSD. So how did and yet there was this hypodermic needle also found on him that police didn't necessarily do anything with. So how did he go on to be end up being someone who gets busted for LSD to being an informant on other drug cases?
Right. That's sort of the pivotal moment in the story in terms of UMass's role in all of this. The campus police had information that he was selling drugs, and he allegedly was selling drugs, and they sent an undercover agent to buy LSD from him, and he made the sale. They caught him dead to rights, and they searched the room. They found other drugs. They found a bunch of cash, and they found this syringe, which UMass policy forbids syringes without a doctor's order because it can be used for injectable drugs, obviously. So that's drug paraphernalia that they discovered. But the police chose not to do what they would normally have done, which is, you know, arrest him, press charges, get him removed from the dorms immediately, suspended from school. They said, "We can avoid all of that if you become an informant and help us catch another drug dealer who operates on a larger scale, had more of a record." Mm-hmm. He called that an offer I can't refuse, and he did it. So he went straight with the police officers that same night to another student's room, made a purchase with police money, and they were able to capture this other person who they did arrest, they right. did suspend, they did prosecute.
I mean, as the Globe reports, Logan was telling friends or texting friends that he felt like he didn't really have a choice to whether or not to become an informant, because the alternative was a minimum of 5 years in prison, having to potentially pay back tens of thousands of dollars in student loans, and of course his family being notified. But isn't it standard protocol on college campuses that for arrests like this, that the university does inform families?
Well, that's a good point. And even short of being arrested, they will notify parents. There's a very clear substance abuse policy, and it says for first offense. And what that means is if on campus you're found that you did drink in your room, even though you're underage, or you did hold a keg party or whatever, that you will be suspended from housing and that parents will be notified on the first offense. So normally, even if there's no law enforcement outside of the campus, they would notify parents on the first offense.
Mm, but that didn't happen in this case because he agreed to become a campus informant. How widespread is the use of students in, you know, what many people see as vulnerable situations as campus informants?
Well, it's something I think a lot of people don't know about. I didn't really know much about it until we started investigating the story. But it apparently does happen at a lot of different campuses. And if you look around, you'll see like the Air Force Academy, University of Alabama, University of Wisconsin. They've all had major arrests that have flowed from having confidential informants. At UMass Amherst, they've quietly had this policy in place for like 25 plus years. And so far as I know, it was mainly an issue back when marijuana was criminal and there was fighting over whether it was appropriate to be outing kids from marijuana possession violations using informants. But this has been a very quiet program that people haven't paid too much attention to until now. Suddenly we're thinking, wait a minute, is heroin the epidemic? Is that something that just sort of flew below the radar screen at UMass Amherst and they didn't sort of appreciate that it actually was there? And they saw the value of catching an LSD dealer as a much higher priority than preventing a heroin addiction.
Right. Well, we reached out to UMass Amherst, Steve, they wanted to join us on the program, and they sent us a statement today. It's rather long, but I wanted to just read a small part of it, because about this issue of using students as confidential informants, they say that the decision to use a confidential informant is carefully considered and only undertaken when it is believed that such an informant can lead to the apprehension of a major drug dealer who poses a significant threat to our students. And then they go on to say, the use of confidential informants is especially helpful in combating drug use and trafficking in residence halls. But what about this contention from Logan, and Logan is his middle name. We've opted not to use his full name, just as Globe opted not to, in order to protect his family. But what about the contention that because of this, his heroin addiction went untreated, unaided, that the people most able to help him, his family, weren't given that opportunity?
Well, I think that certainly if you talk to his mother, that's precisely what she does say, that, you know, she felt like there's sort of a red line, and the red line is anything associated with a drug that can kill you, that automatically becomes vastly more important than the next Molly, drug dealer that you're going to find. And in this case, she believes that the syringe should have been the red flag for those officers. And I just want to say about their confidential informants program, it's very well spelled out, and you can ask for a copy of it yourself. It's, you know, multiple pages, and it says what to do in different situations. But the decision-making process is actually at the police officer's level, and they're not telling the administration. So whatever's happening, it's a law enforcement matter. So it's not like it's the dean of students is passing judgment on it. It's something being handled as a law enforcement matter. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly what happened here. They didn't know about Logan until the terrible thing happened, and right. He overdosed and he was gone.
Well, I understand that in the wake of the Globe's reporting, UMass Amherst is considering making some changes to their confidential informant policy.
That's correct. They late on Sunday night, the story ran Sunday morning, and Sunday night they put out a statement saying that they're considering requiring confidential informants to see substance abuse counselors in addition to being informants. Now, that's not the same as notifying parents, but it does at least bring in sort of a help and treatment sort of aspect to the confidential informants program, which up to now has been strictly law enforcement. Mm.
And Scott, in the last couple seconds that we have you, there's so many issues to discuss in this case, but there's one that I think lingers, and that is the position that universities and students find themselves often when it comes to this intersection with campus life and law enforcement. Because on the one hand, yes, they are college students, and universities do act as sort of guardians of a sort of their students. But on the other hand, we're also talking about adults. I mean, they're most of them are 18 and above. And so how does that work in cases of, you know, when we're talking about drug investigations and confidential informants and whether or not families should be informed at all?
Well, it's actually a sort of an awkward area of our society, isn't it? It's, you know, they're 18 to 22 years old, by and large, and they're basically adults, but their parents are still paying the bills, and most of them are still living with their parents. And it's something that doesn't seem to invite an easy answer. And this whole idea of, you know, the dean of students as the keeper of the students, that's sort of a quaint notion from the 50s and certainly before the 60s. But it still does exist to some degree. I mean, they do see themselves as the stewards of these students, and that they're supposed to try to get them help as much as punish them for their wrongdoing and to sort of treat them as people that can still be shaped and improved. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was treated as strictly a law enforcement matter, and they did not second guess the, you know, Logan's judgment that he didn't want help when, in hindsight, he certainly needed it.
Well, Scott Allen is Senior Assistant Metro Editor at the Boston Globe. We have a link to the Globe story about Logan and UMass Amherst and the use of student campus informants. It's at our website, radioboston.org. Scott, thanks so very much.
My pleasure.
And listeners, stay with us. When we return, we're going to recall the sensational collapse of Gary Hart's presidential campaign almost three decades ago and the questions it still raises about probing the private lives of public officials. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.